now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my special guest is David Dunger. David Dunger has been with us in the past. He's got a lot of information to share. We'll have all of his contact information on our website. So without any further ado, David Dunger, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thanks, James. Great to be with you.
Well, a lot of stuff is going on. We're here on the Big Island. They call the Big Island in Hawaii the Big Island, but We are on the Big Island in Australia. And from your perspective, what have you seen? What have you experienced? And, you know, as far as this ongoing isolation thing that's going on and your perspective on that?
Yeah, good question. Look, it's quite a broad answer. So there's a lot of information packed into this. So since it's all begun, it's been a challenge to adhere to all of the rules. The challenge is being locked in your home. You're allowed out, but at the worst, it was mandatory or essential services only. And you were limited also by the distance you could travel effectively. I'm lucky I work for a company that is considered essential. While we all work from home, that could have always been an excuse that I brought out, if I was ever detected moving about. But I think that the hard thing is essential shopping was listed as an item for concern, and the police were given powers, special powers. They made up overnight to be able to fine you $1,000 for just being somewhere without having a purpose for it. With the reasoning behind it being that you could put the hospital staff at risk and others who needed the space if you were involved in a motor vehicle accident. And I think that's really playing on the heartstrings a lot. I take solace and I find a calming sensation if I drive my vehicle just around the block, and that wasn't allowed. And I would use every opportunity to go and do essential shopping and essential shopping needs if we needed it. But to be honest, I had a house full of food that we'd been stocking up since, you know, December, because as soon as I saw the virus coming, I decided that it was probably going to be a good idea. We didn't do the toilet paper thing. Do you know what's really funny about the toilet paper thing? No sci-fi writer has ever talked about it. They never thought that this was going to be an issue, that we would empty the shelves like a hurricane is coming or a cyclone's coming.
I always did, because I would watch these time travel movies and they go back to ancient Rome. I would be thinking, I would be bringing a lot of toilet paper if I was these guys.
If you're going
not
to
really into the
Rome,
sponges on the end of a stick, you know?
Yeah, the rag and a stick, just not a thing for me, right? And just think about today, what kind of viral transmissions there would have been. And they were just lucky to have escaped that, I think. The insertion of someone else's fecal matter as a treatment for a lot of stomach disorders now is a thing. So maybe they had the go on us, possibly. Who knew? So the lockdown, I have to say, I've grown a beard. If you're looking at this on YouTube, I've grown a beard, and this is my ISO beard, my isolation beard. It's quite thick, and all my friends were surprised to see, you know, and I was surprised to see how much gray there is these days. But I started to find something really interesting in isolation, and that was the need to speak to people with a depth of conversation. At work, when you're at work, you're having extremely deep conversations on very important matters, and you seek the trivial conversation, the lighthearted conversation. But when you're in isolation and you're still having work conversations, I was needing contact. I needed to have contact with others. And I needed to be able to not talk about trivial things, but talk about the things that mattered. It was a real big difference. And I started to see the level of that requirement increase as isolation continued. And I think now that I'm in a comfort zone, and I'm saying this while I'm talking to you, I'm in a comfort zone where I feel that that level of conversation is at a nice balance. I found the balance and the harmony with myself. And while we're going into winter, I was still able to, you know, get out and about and stay grounded with my shoes off, which is what I'd like to do. I live in a forest, and there's a lot of health benefits from just walking around in a forest. That's actually been found. There's a study from Japan where they would put people in isolation in a forest for 3 days, and they measured their immune responses, and their immune responses were heightened as a result of being within a forest. So being in a city is less. You get almost none of that. The other one they found was after you hear someone sneeze, you have an immune response spike that comes up automatically. It's just an automatic process, so that your body takes and adheres to. But having said all that, you know, we live in Australia, right? In the Big Island, as you opened with, and that is that we're so isolated from everywhere else, and we can cut off transport. To our benefit, I suppose, because if we were landlocked or had land borders with others, that would have been really a much harder thing to control. But what it did for us was it allowed us to receive pretty much 6,000 people from ships and from around the world, which brought the virus to our shores. People exiting China, the 5 million that exited Wuhan, a proportion of those came here. Those people brought the virus here, and we saw that back in the Spanish flu days, where, you know, returning servicemen from the war and by ship, mind you, they brought the virus here, and it came in waves of and there was two separate events. My hands are too low. Two separate events where we thought we'd extinguished it, and then the second wave came, and the first one was a prolonged, like a second dip. But the second wave hit really hard. And back then, of course, we didn't have any way of being able to treat it. We just put people in beds, even on balconies, trying to get fresh air. And that we didn't have ventilators. We had iron lung, but we didn't have very many of them. And the treatment just thought, you know, well, they'll get over it. And not many people did. So right now, the only way I'll talk about the types of virus. So we know there's L, S, and H strains of the virus. The S strain is the first version, and it's a very light on virus. It's not as lethal. The L strain is found to have been the most lethal of all of them. It's not why it's the L strain, but that one is the one that's currently the most prevalent, and it's thought to be a lung virus. Like, it gets into uses the ACE receptor to restart replicating in your lower lung, and that isn't all that it does. It crosses the border to in your blood, and we now know that it causes clotting and aneurysms and heart attacks. You know, you've got to have, you don't just get it and you've got a sniffle and a headache and a dry throat or whatever, and you start getting this. No, this is really later on. So further down the track, I've been following a really cool YouTube channel where a doctor is talking to other doctors, and I've found out so much more. He's like 6 weeks ahead of everybody else, and the link will be down in the description. So knowing that it gets in via the lungs and it infects your bloodstream, causing your blood to become gel-like in the extreme cases, is really bad. So there isn't very much you can do to avoid it. to avoid, you, once you've got it, you don't know which strain you've got, and you can be infected by multiple strains at the same time. And a lot of the people who are saying that it's only a virus, and yeah, sure, it's only got, you know, 4.5 million, that's the current figure from yesterday, total of the 7.7 billion in the world. Yeah, that's a small percentage. But when you're talking about the case fatality rates of the countries that it is infecting, Britain is the highest so far at 95% case fatality rate, because to work out the case fatality rate, you don't work out the current cases. It's only those people who have exited the virus. So you've either recovered or you've died. You total those together and to have a number, and you divide the amount of deaths by that number, and you end up with the percentage. So yeah, it's pretty hard. So what percentage of those died as a result of getting the virus and have recovered or died? And that's it. So that percentage is pretty high. Australia's down to 1.3. The world is at 16%, and it'll level out. It'll start to decline as people on respirators live their 5 weeks on a respirator and then need 6 to 8 months to recovery time to come out of it on the other side. But that period of time, they hope not to be involved in any of the other disorders that come about. So the same blood disorder problem presents in children in a slightly different way, and that's the Kawasaki disease. The disease itself, I'll back up. So HIV is the virus for, that's the virus name, and AIDS was the syndrome. Well, in this virus, we have SARS-CoV-2 is the virus name, and COVID-19 is the disease name. That's what you present. So you're presenting those symptoms, and that's the syndrome or the disease. But the actual virus is SARS-CoV-2. And why on earth do they call it SARS-CoV-2? Well, it's most like the SARS virus that came out last time with a 9.35, I think, percent case fatality rate. It didn't infect half, as maybe, you know, not even 1% of the people who have been able to get the SARS-CoV-2 virus. It was discovered really early on to have been able to be asymptomatic spread. So you, even 2 weeks up before you present with, you know, a temperature, you're already contagious. And so measuring someone's temperature with the thermometer on your forehead is insufficient in detecting whether you're symptomatic or asymptomatic or contagious. All it does is show those people who are symptomatic. It excludes people who are contagious. If that's what it does, it just, they, you can't tell whether someone's got it or not. And until, of course, you know, just the natural breathing in and out and speaking is sufficient to be able to transmit the virus to another person within a certain proximity. If there's no wind, anyone in front of you is more likely to have it or be able to contract it from you. If you, because they're looking for viral blooms in saliva, is what they're looking for. And you dehydrate saliva out of your mouth by breathing. That's what you're doing. You're distributing it. And that whole function is enough just to be breathed in. And if it is able to make contact with the lower lung, voila, you've got the virus. Because it's so quick to be able to reproduce itself. And a virus contains RNA. It's not a full DNA molecule. It's not two pairs, like a pair wrapped around each other. It is just a strand, and it uses the ACE receptor to open its border with the cell and shares its RNA with the cell. And then
what's an ACE receptor, just to interject?
Oh, okay. All right. So the coronavirus itself, I'll take it back further, that is named because it's a ball with spikes off the outside of it. And those spikes themselves are the connections that have the exact key that fits the lock in our cells. Only in the lower respiratory system are these cells found with the ACE receptor. They're also used when people smoke. So if you smoke cigarettes, those ACE receptors are activated. But it does very little else. And it's basically used, the virus is so precisely tuned and has the exact key to get into our cell. And then it basically ejects from itself the RNA strand. It's just a strand, a protein strand. And it uses three separate replication events to be able to reconstruct itself. So the first one is called RDRP. And what it is, we have little things, let's just call them little machines inside your cell there's proteins swimming around in this liquid, in the cytosol. And the little machine detects, I think it's three at the front, five at the end on a strand. Say there's three A's on the front and five A's on the rear. It says, I know where the front is. I've identified three A's. Now I'm going to start to copy the strand. And it runs it through like a pasta maker. It churns through. Every time it detects one, it picks one up from the soup and joins it together and makes an exact copy. So it runs the strand through, and out the side comes a copy of this strand, right? So it runs it through this way, out the side comes the strand, and it can replicate the same strand over and over again. But that is a copy that needs to be replicated two more times, a negative and a positive version, and they connect together and you've got an RNA strand. So three different processes are required to produce a single copy of a single cell's RNA that's infected us. However, there are things that can produce it, stop it from happening. The RDRP, that's the last one, is polymerase. The first one is zinc. The presence of zinc will interrupt that replication process, causing little chunks to fly out. It won't be a continuous strand. So that's really interesting. But how do you get zinc into the cell? Well, you have to have zinc in your bloodstream. And there's a perfect medication that's already been made by a German company that is hydroxychloroquine. You might have heard of that. So hydroxychloroquine has a single place where zinc can be connected to it, and it injects itself with the same style key into your cell, and it pushes the zinc in there. It's like a little hypodermic needle in the way it works. And so that the presence of zinc, and the more zinc, the more it inhibits the ability for the virus to replicate. And I know that our hospitals in Australia are using hydroxychloroquine as a treatment for those. And that's why we have such a low death toll at 1.5%, 1.3% today, I think it is. And there are others. Remdesivir, I think, is the other one. In conjunction with hydroxychloroquine are both fantastic for being able to not fix you, but lower the caseload of the virus in you so that it is less of a problem for you overall and your body's able to fight it. It's only the ability to fight the virus that allows you to survive it. If your immune system is low or you aren't taking something to suppress the replication of the virus, it overwhelms you so quickly that you're incapable of fighting any longer, and then you pass away of these other symptoms. You don't just drown in your own liquid like a pneumonia, but it also has the bloodborne version of the virus, which thickens up the blood and makes it, it's very difficult to survive that. So that's what we're seeing for the most part. And the weak, the elderly, anyone with a pre-existing condition, of which is named obesity. And the whole of the Western society is having a hard time with the virus because of that single condition. let alone kidney problems, heart problems, lung problems, or anything else that you might have, you might be facing. And I think that's really hard. If you were going to make a virus to do anything, and you're in a country where there isn't, there's obesity is probably the least of your problems because there isn't very much of it. That might be a targeted way of being able to deploy something. I'm not saying that it is man-made, except that it has been discovered that there are markers, four markers on the virus itself that appear to be not natural. So I have to leave that up to everyone else's.
Could you elaborate on what those four markers are? Because you talked earlier about how the ACE receptors were very specific. Those connectors, we've all seen the graphics on the TV news presenters.
Yeah,
shows,
yeah, we've seen the virus.
They're constantly
visual,
hammering us with the image of this thing. But somehow this thing kind of just binds specifically, you know, down by the lung. So what are those four markers?
Yeah, right. Good question. So the bat version of the virus doesn't have an ACE2 receptor on it. Let's just put it that way. It doesn't have the key for human replication. And the difference between a virus and a bacteria, the virus needs the host to replicate it, and a bacteria can self-replicate. That's the easiest way to think about it, because a bacteria has DNA and a replication of itself. It could split itself and grow, whereas a virus needs the host to do the replication for it. So if we were to, hold a bat while it's breathing and breathe it in, it's never going to give us the virus because it doesn't have an ACE2 key. And they found that the person that was doing the research in Wuhan, that it's turned out this way, that we've discovered that the person was working with a coronavirus. And coronaviruses are the normally it's the same family as the flu virus that we get, you know, annually. Not the common cold, but the flu virus. So the difference between a cold and a flu. One's upper respiratory and the other one's lower respiratory. And so the DNA, the RNA sequence of that the person has been working on back in 2015 was posted to a website that is I forget the name of it, but it's a website that all of the people doing research on viruses, they throw the virus strain up there, or the strand, the detail, and other people can go, oh, okay, yeah, no dramas. And they've got printers now that can print the RNA sequence of any virus that's listed. And what they did, they had a look at this and went, yeah, okay, well, that's the coronavirus from the bat. And then it changed. They made it into a human ACE2 receptor virus. And then since that date, four different markers that have basically the feature set of the virus, this is the instruction set, have then changed subsequently. And the playing with the feature set will make it either harmless or it can make it more virulent. It can change the properties about the virus. So you can make it either really severe. We know they've got the plague. They've got the plague, they've got the black plague, they've got the one that's, you know, bad for your brain, the other one bad for your muscles. They've got all these things. They have all these viruses and they're playing with them all the time, and it's not new. That whole concept is not new. What was the difference between what they found, this DNA or the RNA, sorry, I should be very clear, the RNA of the virus to have four changes, because since that person ceased the work on it, she was moved to another project, then it became this thing. And this is the same thing now we've found out in the wild, and it doesn't look like natural mutations. These look like they were intentional.
Hold that thought right there, because I'd like you to continue that stream of thought. For the layperson, please differentiate between DNA and RNA and the implications of both.
Yeah, look, it really is very important. we know that they can play with things now. We're not designers yet. We're not designing something from scratch, but we're playing and seeing what's going on. The most effort that was ever put into DNA was the fruit fly, and they started hacking the code while it was still an embryo for fruit flies, and were able to and successfully did change the properties about what's called budding points. So this was back in the 80s, and they were hacking it around. So a fruit fly is the same. It's got two eyes, six legs, I think two wings. It's not a set of four wings, but insects have four wings, right? Four wings. But two of them are only buds. They're only little sticks, and they use those for balance. The other two are full wings. And so what they did was they decided to see what they could do. And when they started working on it, they ended up having eyes where the legs would be because they're budding points off the torso. They put eyes where the wings should be. They put wings where the eyes should be. And they played with being able to move these specific things around on what basically like Lego connecting points called budding points. So we know we've been playing with them. And what's unusual is that the fruit fly has the same amount of DNA pairs that humans have, and has 23 base pairs. So that you've got to have a look at the broader picture. They chose that intentionally to play with it, to see what they could do. And you could only imagine that we'd be able to have, you know, eyes where our shoulder are, arms coming out of our eyes, sockets, you know, that kind of silly thing. So they'd be able to do that, knowing what they were able to do with the fruit fly. But there, of course, officially, there was no true legal way of being able to do it. Up until very recently, when they said human DNA manipulation is now a thing. You can do that. And that's why, you know, the I think was it in China, I think, where they said that they could have, you know, designer babies. If you want to design a baby, you can go there, you know, you can have any color eye you want. It can be fast, it can run fast or have different properties. So intelligence, let's hope one day that we exceed our current levels of and restrictions in intelligence. So with all of that known, Australia now is seeing a very low case of community transmission, and it's really cool because what it means is we can start to relax our lockdown. This is one of the things that it's getting to us all, I think. It's very tough. We've started to adapt our society. If it went for another 6 months, I think we'd have a completely different marketplace. Everything would have adapted to be able to be takeaway or delivery or operate within certain limits. But right now, I think we started to get to there, to a really good place, but I don't think it's lasted long enough for us to cope. Everyone wants to return back to the way it was. But what have we seen? What's a good positive that we've seen? We've seen the air has never been cleaner. You know, wildlife is coming back down from the mountains. You know, Venice, we saw dolphins swimming around in Venice. The water, you can see the bottom. You know, those gondolas with the sticks, and it's just stirring up the mud on the bottom and has made that filth. Now dolphins are back. See how quickly we could change this. I can only imagine Greta Thunberg is beside herself, you know, and the climate activists have been beside themselves saying, see, we can do this. Imagine if we never went back to operating businesses the way we used to, with high capital expenditure as a business themselves, you know, a cross section of the businesses having to own the biggest building and have the biggest lights and the names and all the people going there, and they spend the electricity, yeah, and they have to pay for the internet for everyone to work. They've got to pay for the, you know what I mean? So everything is centralized around there. Then the entire community pays to have these roads to make us get there and to have all of the infrastructure and, you know, the public transport and everything. And yeah, there's a lot of satellite businesses that work around that. So we have, you know, we have food retail and other businesses that supply things, you know, cleaning services. You think about all of that stuff that structure supports. Well, if we didn't do that, if we didn't return back and we just kept doing what we're doing now, we're all telecommuting. Very few of us have to actually go into work. If you're in a job that needs to, like your building industry or cleaning industry or whatever it happens to be, then that's good. And I respect, you know, I respectively understand what it means for you to be that person, right? If you're in retail, for instance. However, we'd never have to make, looking at the roads and their use right now, we'd never have to make another road improvement or expansion for 50 years if we never had to go to the cities. Imagine turning those into apartment living rather than businesses. I can see the world changing in ways that we've never been able to do because of the thing we made. We made it acceptable to have to commute for 2 hours to go to work, right? I'm putting my hand up. I used to have to do that a day in one direction. We made it so that businesses were able to dictate how we operated. Why? Only for profit. Well, if they can make the same profit without us going there and without the capital expense of having to have a building and pay for electricity and all the seats and the cleaning and the carpet, you know, everything they do, maybe they don't have to. Maybe this could be the new normal and we could really make a change. Just maybe. And that's what I'm kind of hoping that I think, because of the success of the lockdowns, the few people that have died, certainly in Australia, but I don't envy anywhere else. And, you know, I have to say this, the US and Russia and United Kingdom at the top of the leaderboard right now for the amount of cases in their respective countries looks like the Olympic medal tally list, doesn't it? The US, Russia, United Kingdom, Australia's like 23rd, right? That's where we always are. I have to laugh because when I see what we were forced to do, which we just were born into, we totally accepted it as the thing that we had to do for a civilization to exist. I think it was flawed, totally flawed. The amount of pollutants that we put in the air just having to go to work is insane. Electric cars couldn't come fast enough, but all the things that we put in place in the last 10 years. So everything that was contactless, we have probably, we've got, what are we, like 48th in the world, James, for internet? It's so...
Yeah, it's abysmally slow here.
Yes, that's right. So they found when we went into lockdown that there wasn't enough bandwidth to watch Netflix and have video meetings for work. And so I know personally with the contacts through my company that the NBN, that's the National Broadband Network, which is government, basically a filtering service. They can listen to and see everything that transverses through the internet. It's the new echelon of Australia. That's what it is. And James knows what I mean. So having that in place wasn't quite sufficient. And the government said, oh, do you think we're going to have enough bandwidth? And they go, mm-mm, and shook their head like a monkey saying, no, I don't want to eat that, right? What's it going to take? Oh, we have to make some improvements. How long? Oh, 8 months. Oh, really? So we'll be out of lockdown by the time you finish fixing the internet. Yeah, okay. So what it meant was, we have abysmally slow internet, but what we did, we made touchless technology in advance, which I don't believe was unintentional. I believe that NFC in our phones and credit cards and being able to tap, I think we all call it as tap technology, right? You got to pay for something, you don't have to touch it. You just, that's it. You've paid for it and you move on. You know, you can Apple Watch it, I think, or something like that. You Fitbit it or whatever, right? You can, I paid for that, I paid for this. We were worried before we went into this, that there was a technological hackers, you know, dreamscape of having touchless payments because people could take money from you without you knowing. Well, if you're not in proximity with anyone, they can't. And at least it stops someone from copying your credit card and passing it back to you and then using it on your behalf when you weren't there. So that no one's actually, you know, I think there's a fine line. But we prepared ourselves for this. Was this truly, my question is, was it a global initiative to begin this in preparation for a virus? The slight modifications that we needed to make around, you know, the shopping cart handle and cleaning that and, you know, sanitizer and being able to do essential shopping was only a very slight change. It really didn't cost the business very much to have, you know, a roll of, you know, Dettol wipes and you can just, you know, wipe down the handles. But I have to ask, anyone currently in lockdown, have they come home and taken all their clothes off and washed them? Have they disinfected anything using UV lights or disinfectant? Have they washed all their things with soap when they get home? No, not at all. We're seeing that the abuse of the elderly in homes with very little amount of cleanliness being observed. Usually one registered nurse per cluster of buildings because they can't afford a registered nurse to be on full time at every site. So there'll be one that's on call. I think there's a lot of things we still need to change about our society to make lockdown effective. But to be honest, when we're seeing clusters of people, you know, failing cleanliness orders and transmitting the disease amongst each other, let's say I said disease, because that's, you can transmit a disease, you can transmit a virus, but just be careful. When you listen to the media and you hear them saying COVID-19, the spread of COVID-19, it sort of irks me because that's only the symptoms. That's only what you present, and try to be careful and try to correct people if you hear them say SARS-CoV-2. But I've launched, how's this interview, man, already? You asked me two questions and I'm like half an hour in and 40 minutes in. One of the things that I noticed was the Ebola virus, named after the river, the Ebola River. The Zika virus, it was named after the forest, the Zika forest, where it was first, tracked back to. The German measles then became the measles later on because, you know, people got upset about that. But I never was angry at Germans because of the German measles. I was never angry at anyone that lived around the Ebola River for the propagation of the virus. And why is this not the China flu? Why is it not that? Why was it named the SARS-CoV-2 when, you know, SARS, MERS, the MERS its original strain came from China. The bird flu, the swine flu, all of those are coming out of China. And I think that there's going to be a toll or a cost to pay. I think all of the viruses that, and the cost of the first to the economy and then to the death toll, will be totaled up probably when we're through the virus. And there may be some, you know, an expensive bill to pay. I think China might be asked to pay. And look, I'm not saying that they should. I just think I'm seeing the wording currently in the media, which is an aggressive stance. Our media, certainly the right-wing media, is extremely aggressive in it. Maybe the left isn't so much, but still trying to, you know, ease its way through this. We're seeing war footings, posturing from the US and China against each other and trade wars. We're seeing now in Australia the beef and the barley, they're going to put an 80% tariff on Australian barley for some reason. It looks and appears to be in retaliation to our request for an investigation into the virus itself, in not COVID-19, but into the SARS-CoV-2 origination. And will this mean, this is what's being called, these aren't my ideas, this is what's in the right-wing media, you can find it if you look. It looks to be a call for this totaling up of what it meant to us, and because of the right-wing claim that China was negligent for 3 weeks, didn't tell everyone, caused the virus to, allowed the virus while they closed their internal borders, but left their external borders, their international borders, open to allow people to leave with the virus, maybe thinking they were doing the right thing with, you know, the thermometer to their head, and but knowing that it was fully asymptomatic by December 31st, they already knew that, and they still let people leave, was irresponsible. And I think there's going to be a call, according to the right-wing media, there's going to be a call for some kind of payback. So if you were, I think Venezuela, for instance, I think it's Venezuela that has, because of China's debt diplomacy, Venezuela can't pay it back. So that they said, look, we'll sign an agreement with you. We'll give you 80% of our fuel that we produce. We give it to China. It can sell it for the value of our loan repayments. But thank you very much, China, for all of the money you've established, these bridges and roads and all the infrastructure, which is great. I think at some point, countries are going to say, you know what? We're not going to pay back that loan. We're closing our border to you financially and internationally and economically. We're going to close the border to you, and we've got all these other countries, everyone but you, that we're going to deal with. And I think it's going to be a hard time. I don't know what the outcome would be. I think this posturing is very similar to what I saw in history after the First World War. It's the trade, the embargoes, the trade, like I said, trade wars. This posturing, the kind of verbiage coming from all of the countries that have been negatively impacted. So when the virus first broke, China made a call out to all the countries to donate medical supplies to China, and we all did. And then when Italy started to ramp up and go exponential, it said to China, hey, can we have some of that stuff back? Because your numbers have tapered off. Can we have some of our masks back? And they said, yeah, if you buy them back. And they had to buy back their own masks that they donated for free to China, and they were still in the same boxes. And that's really terrible. I think when you were looking at, and that's what I think, but the media's been bashing this, they're now calling it a regime, the CCP, and some people are even calling it the CCP virus. But I don't want people to get upset with China, the people of China. There's nothing wrong with the people. Usually in any country, there's nothing wrong with the people. It's the governance. And governance can be so appalling that, you know, would you want to live in China? Would you want to live in a place where, you know, every single word you say is monitored? Oh, hang on. That's here as well. Would you want to be in a place where you can't just post anything on Facebook? Oh, that already happens everywhere. Would you want to be in a place where history has been changed because, well, the government said it was this way? Oh, hang on. That's everywhere too. Is the government as bad as we're calling it out to be? Because we think all of those things never happened to us, and they do as well. In fact, I tried to post, the other day I was talking to someone, I tried to post a link to a website that showed China's military bases, specifically because I found a whole bunch of them on Google Earth anyway, but one of them had it was really interesting too. This was, it was only about interest. One of them had the apron around the apron's not the airstrip part. It's where all the taxiways and apron, the big concrete bits, were painted in camouflage. So from the sky, from the satellite, when you look down, you really didn't see it until you got up close. Then you could see the underground bunker hangers all hanging off the sides. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. I'll just send it to my friend in Facebook Messenger. And it said, that's restricted material. I'm not allowed to send that.
Could you email that to me?
I'll email it to you. Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.